Well, Lester Holt concluded Friday night's NBC News broadcast with a report on the challenge facing all of us to think of the right words by which to express our love for and gratitude to Mom on Mother's Day. Now, knowing that children can always be counted on to say adorable things in telegenic ways, ways that are good for the camera, Harry Smith, the reporter, went to the Ascension School in Manhattan to ask some second graders what it was they were saying about their mothers. One little girl whose mother is an attorney said that her mother was smart. Another little girl said that when she thought of her mom, she thought of cooking. Maybe she wasn't as impressed with Mom's vocational skills in other places. Harry Smith then went to a card shop to interview some adults and find out what sort of pre-printed sentiments these adults were offering their mothers. One woman had picked a card that said, "A mother is someone who can take the place of others, but whose place can be taken by no one else." Another woman went with a card that she thought properly reflected her own mother's attitude toward child rearing. Its greeting said, "I don't give a rat's ass. Eat your peas." Some of us have more complicated relationships with mothers. The highlight of the story, however, was undoubtedly a bespectacled little boy with a poetic spirit who said that when he thinks of his mother, he thinks of tiny little rosebuds because they're sweet like she is. Well, asking children for their opinion about important matters has been popular at least since Art Linkletter's Children Say the Darndest Things. We ask kids questions on important matters in order to elicit cute or humorous responses, as when 5-year-old Elaine explains that love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. When asked about love, though, children can be equally profound. 6-year-old Nika says, "If you want to learn to love better, you should start with someone you hate." Bobby, who is 7, says, "Love is what's in the room at Christmas if you stop opening presents and listen." Billy, age 4, thinks that when someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. If we ask Jesus about love, we're likely to get an equally profound, if rather more complicated, answer. When his disciples wanted to know about love from Jesus, he told them, "Love one another." Now, one bumper sticker, which is a popular medium for theological expression, adds parenthetically to love one another, "It really is that simple." But of course, when we talk with Jesus about love, it is seldom that simple, especially if we are reading in the Gospel of John, where understanding Jesus' meaning is about as straightforward as understanding any given sentence written by James Joyce or William Faulkner. Now, unlike in Joyce and Faulkner, Jesus in John's Gospel doesn't speak in long stream of consciousness run-on sentences. But Jesus in John's Gospel does talk in catchwords, using a mix of instruction and symbol and theology. As Patrick Johnson notes, in this week's passage alone, there are several possible themes that we could have explored in the sermon. Jesus talks about abiding or remaining. Jesus talks about obedience. Jesus talks about love. Jesus talks about joy. Jesus talks about choosing and being chosen and bearing fruit. The words that Jesus says always seem to twist in and out like string in the game Cat's Cradle. Maybe the best way to tie all of those things together, then, to make sense of what Jesus is saying, is to say that if we abide in God's love, and if God's love is to abide in us, Then we will all choose to obey the commandment to love one another. And when we love one another, then we will bear fruit. It's still a mouthful, but I think you see where I'm going. Well, maybe the best way to come at this is to consider love as both a noun and a verb, because Jesus uses love in both ways. When Jesus uses love as a noun, it's usually in the sense of to abide or to remain, and in that sense, maybe God's love is like a house. It's a safe place. You go there to be authentically you. It is that place where you can go and be accepted exactly for who you are. It is at home that you should find everything that you need. But remaining in God's love also suggests that love should be thought of in terms of a relationship. Love is an entity, a thing with status, a thing that if we wanted to, we could update on our Facebook pages. Are you in a relationship? Yes, I'm in a relationship with God. Sorry, boyfriend. Make way for God. Love is about communicating and being with, not so much about doing as about being. But of course, in order to maintain a healthy relationship, to abide in a relationship, you do have to do certain things, and that allows us to explore love as a verb. If you love someone, you do things for that person. On Mother's Day, for instance, you take mom to lunch, or if it's not pouring cats and dogs, you might go for a walk at the Arboretum. Chances are you will find something to do today that mom wants to do. But all of those things come at some cost, but you freely choose to do those things because you want your mother or your wife to know that you love her. Which raises the question of why it is that Jesus has to give us an order, a commandment to love one another. Now, we often say that you cannot legislate morality. You know, we've all heard that. You cannot legislate morality, which is odd because all of law expresses some moral decision. The law is based on some sense of what is right and what is wrong. But what makes Jesus think that he can give us a command to love? Well, as Tom Wright points out, the command to love is given by one who has himself done everything that love can do. When a mother loves a child, for instance, Wright says, she creates the context in which the child is free to love her in return. A mother who herself knows love, a mother who herself has been loved, will love her child freely and sacrificially, getting up for the midnight feedings, tending to the scraped knee, helping with science projects and math problems, counseling and consoling after the big breakup with the person you thought was the love of your life. All of these things show love. And Jesus showed his love for us in this, that he laid down his life for us. And precisely because Jesus laid down his life for us, he can give us the command to love one another. And because Jesus obeyed his heavenly Father, he stands on solid ground and expecting that you and I will obey his own command to love. And we will obey because we're not simply servants or slaves, but precisely because we are Jesus' friends. We don't obey as people who have to because they are slaves or servants. We don't have to do this because we have no say in the matter, but rather we will obey precisely because we are Jesus' friends. We will do it because of the joy entailed in being obedient to Jesus. It is a joy to obey Jesus' commandments because we are no longer Jesus' servants, nor are we his slaves. Of course, we want to do the things he tells us to do, but we don't have to. We freely choose to do them. because we're his friends. And we are Jesus' friends, well, just because it pleases him to call us friends. We're his friends because he loves us. We're Jesus' friends not because of the jobs we do or the families we have or the ways in which we vote or the major achievements of our lives. Rather, we are Jesus' friends simply because Jesus says so. Because Jesus is pleased to call us friends. We're Jesus' friends just because Jesus thought life would be better that way. His life would be better, and our lives would be better. And when it comes down to it, friends love one another, which isn't always easy to do. Calling each other on the phone is easy. Calling each other out isn't. Holding each other in prayer is often easy. Holding one another accountable isn't. Sharing victories with our friends is often easy. Sharing life's tragedies and challenges isn't. And sometimes we come to church looking for people with whom to be friends. Melissa Bain Sevier knows a woman who has been heavily involved in churches for over 20 years. Recently, the woman started attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. There, the friend says, she has finally discovered the church she'd always been seeking. Because it was her AA friends who would listen to her without judgment, and it was her AA friends who, when she was feeling stressed, would call her to check on her. And they did those things because that's what friends do. You are my friends, Jesus says, if you do what I command you, and I have commanded you to love one another. In Frederick Buechner's words, to be Jesus' friends, we have to be each other's friends. Conceivably, even lay down our lives for each other. You never know, Buechner says. It is a high price to pay, and Jesus does not pretend otherwise. But the implication is that it's worth every cent. Thanks be to God that we are Jesus' friends, called, commanded, invited to love one another. I'm grateful for this community of friends in which we worship and serve together.